Most churches have small groups that meet for prayer, Bible study, and fellowship, yet many of those groups have reached a ceiling. Group members are vulnerable with one another to a certain point. They hold each other accountable, but again, only so far. They engage in ministry to one another and to others outside their group, but again, there seems to be something that keeps these groups from reaching their full potential. Now, this is not to say that good things are not happening in these groups, yet many of us long for more. We're reaching for what lies beyond the ceiling. We crave deeper community, life-on-life discipleship, and missional impact that makes a significant difference in the world around us. What makes small groups grow? In this session, I'll share some research on small groups from a book called Small Groups Big Impact by Jim Eagley and Dwight Marabell. The authors surveyed 3,000 small group leaders and over 200 churches in multiple countries. Some of the results were expected, while others were rather surprising. They discovered that thriving small groups have three things in common. They draw people to Christ through conversion growth. They assimilate new people into group life, and they multiply by launching new groups. So what kind of leaders facilitate this kind of growth? Eagley and Marabell discovered the difference between successful leaders and unsuccessful ones all relate to controlled behaviors, not to predetermined traits. Success in leading a small group is not dependent on things like marital status, age, educational level, personality, spiritual gifts, or even time devoted to preparing for the small group meeting. What does matter is that growing groups have leaders who are spending time with God. They're praying for group members and their gathering times. They're modeling outreach and encouraging others to reach out to unbelievers. They're investing in people's lives. This means that anyone with a heart for God and people can be an effective small group leader. You might think, I'm not terribly outgoing, or I don't have a lot of time to prepare the lessons. That's okay. Invest yourself in people's lives, pray, encourage, and build others up, and God will use you as a small group leader. Eagley and Marabell discovered that growing groups and their leaders do four things. They pray, reach out to lost people, care for one another, and empower others to use their gifts to live out God's call in their lives. If you take nothing else away from the small group ministry course, please remember these four growth factors. Seek to do more of each of them in God's strength and according to His leading. As you do so, I believe you'll see God do some amazing things in your group. We're going to look at each of the four growth practices and unpack them to see how we can strengthen each one in our small groups. As I mentioned already, we're moving toward three growth outcomes as we give more attention to these practices. First, we're hoping that unsaved people will come to know Christ through our small group ministry. Second, we want people to feel welcome in our small group. That's assimilation. And third, we're anticipating that our small group will multiply in some way to increase its impact. If we're experiencing something good in our small group, wouldn't we want others to experience it too? Let's take a look at prayer, the first strategy for achieving the three growth outcomes. What Eagley and Marabell discovered is that when a small group leader was committed to prayer, 83% of those groups saw at least one person come to know Christ during the previous 9 months. Praying leaders make a difference in their groups. When groups did not have praying leaders, a much smaller percentage of them, 19%, saw someone accept Christ during that same 9-month time period. So let's say your church has 15 small groups. If every group leader was committed to prayer, you could potentially see 12 people come to Christ during the next 9 months. Now that's exciting. What does a commitment to prayer look like in the life of a small group leader? According to Eagley and Marabell, praying leaders spend consistent time with God. This will look different, obviously, from person to person. For some, it's going to be praying during the commute to work. Others might set aside a prayer time each day at home. The bottom line is spending time with God on a regular basis. It may also involve spending more time with God. We can increase the time we spend alone with Him, but the goal is to become more conscious of God throughout the day, to walk in dependence on Him all the time. Praying leaders are growing in their capacity to live a lifestyle of prayer where we're mindful of God throughout the day. So why does prayer make such a difference anyway? There's something powerful about coming into a prayer-soaked group where you sense God's presence. In addition, people sense that praying leaders care for them. When we pray for people, we tend to love them more. People see the fruit of the Spirit in praying leaders. When we live a lifestyle of prayer, others will see more of Jesus in us and be drawn to Him. Praying leaders hear from God. We know that Jesus took time to be alone with the Father. He prayed, committed His ways to the Father, and poured out His heart to Him. I think the Father revealed things to His Son during those times of prayer, and it's true for us too. As we spend time in prayer, God will reveal His will to us. We'll find out important information related to our group. Maybe God will show us an emphasis that we need to bring to our next small group meeting. You see, when we listen to God, He begins to impress upon us people that need prayer and actions that we need to take. Prayer makes a huge difference in the life of a small group. Reaching out to unbelievers is the second growth practice of growing small groups. Groups that have an outward focus are much more likely to see people come to know Christ. Sometimes we slip into a mindset in the church that small groups exist for themselves. That's partly true. They do exist to build up and care for each other, but that's only part of the picture. Nowhere in Scripture do we see that we exist for ourselves. We exist for God. We're here to fulfill the Great Commission to make disciples of all the nations. Discipleship without a strong outreach focus is not a full expression of biblical discipleship. We need to reach out to others. Of course, that's going to look different from group to group. For some, it's going to be praying together or supporting each other in personal outreach. Other groups are going to have a mission. They're going to be out feeding the homeless and trying to address social issues, perhaps. Eagley and Marable's research found that 90% of groups that had this outward focus saw someone come to know Christ in the last 6 months, compared to 11% of groups that didn't have that outward focus. That means that outward focus groups are 8 times more likely to see people come to Christ than those who don't have that kind of external focus. Lives change for eternity when groups have an outward focus. So, what does reaching out look like anyway? Eagley and Marable propose 5 I's for reaching out. The first one is investment. Group members invest in the lives of unsaved people. Do you ever find that you become so busy with church life that you don't have time for unbelievers? I remember walking to church one Sunday when I was a pastor. I was in a hurry as I had to get there to carry out my Sunday morning responsibilities. My neighbor came out of his house as I walked past his driveway. He had his painting clothes on and said to me, "I'm so stressed. I need to get this painting done because someone's coming in a couple of hours to do the next part of my renovation project." I said, "Oh, that's too bad." And then I walked to church. Well, I didn't really have a choice that morning because of my other church commitments. However, it was a wake-up call for me because I recognized that this lack of engagement with my neighbors had become the norm for me. I was just walking by my neighbors and not really helping them, serving them, or caring for them. I decided to rearrange my priorities. I tried to be more available and to have time in my life for those that were around me. Investment is all about group members spending time with friends in order to share Christ. The next I of reaching out is invitation, which means encouraging members to invite others to our small group. It kind of depends on your small group, but for an unsaved person who's had little experience in the church, to attend a well-seasoned small group of Christians can be rather daunting. Therefore, we need to ease people into Christian community. One way is to have social events as a small group and then simply invite our unsaved friends who we've already been sharing life with to come and be a part of that social time. For example, people are often willing to come to a barbecue in our homes. As time goes on, these friends get to know people in your small group. As relationships build, they might become more willing to come to your group's regular time. Of course, some may never come to your small group meeting. However, you've brought them into a loving community where they see Christ. We know that Jesus Himself said, "How will they know that you are my disciples except if you have love for one another?" When people see that love in action, they'll see Jesus and be drawn to Him. It all starts with relationships and inviting them into community. The third I in reaching out is intention. As you think about your small group, do you have a stated intention to reach the lost? Is that one of your primary objectives? I find that we often forget this goal of reaching the lost. We get busy caring for each other, which, of course, is good. Yet reaching the lost gets missed. Becoming more intentional about outreach means spending time at every small group meeting, thinking, praying, and talking about the lost and how are we going to reach them. Intercession is the fourth I of reaching out. I remember being a part of a small group where we prayed for unsaved friends almost every week. Not only did we see God do some amazing things in response to our prayers, it kept the vision for outreach alive in our hearts. The fifth I is imitation. When small group leaders model relational outreach, they provide an example for others to imitate. Right now, I'm thinking of a small group experience where I knew that the leaders were actively involved in the lives of unsaved people. They regularly shared about the people they were reaching out to, and they even invited some of them to our small group social times. It was inspiring and made me want to follow their example. Okay, in this session, we've looked at prayer and reaching out as the first two small group practices that lead to growth. In the next session, we'll move on to exploring how caring for and empowering others are also key strategies for growing healthy small groups.